All right, unless we've got anything on Joshua that we haven't covered or you didn't get to say last week, we're going to go on to the book of Judges. Anybody have anything, any residual comments that you needed to make? Got a couple more books up here. Somebody doesn't have one on the Old Testament studies. Anybody need one? Okay, we're on page 8 then in the workbook. Look at the chart. And as we usually do, let's begin with the key verses. What do you have? I'll give you the first shot. Okay. I'm going to have to look at that one because I don't remember that one. Ah, yeah, okay. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That sounds like a pretty good summation of the book of Judges. That roller coaster up and down. Obey God for a while. Get a good judge, and then they stray, and then the other nations oppress them, and they cry out for God, and He delivers them, and so they're back to faithfulness for a while, and after that judge dies, then they're back to it over and over. Okay, what else? I got one that goes right along with that. Judges 2, and this is kind of a longer stretch here, 10 through 19, and that's right after Joshua and generation has died, and it says there another generation that arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. And then 11 through 19 talks about how they angered God by following after the Baals, forsaking the Lord, verse 13. And so, of course, God was angry with them, sold them into the hands of their enemies, and wherever they went, the Lord was against them. But then in their distress, God delivered them. And then again, just like we talked about, that roller coaster, faithfulness, unfaithfulness, faithfulness, unfaithfulness, just on and on. Any others? I also had 10, verses 7 and 8. And this, again, is pretty much the descriptive of what's been going on. The anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, sold them into the hand of the Philistines, in the hands of the people of Ammon. From that year they harassed and oppressed the children of Israel for 18 years, all the children of Israel who were on the other side of the Jordan in the land of Amorites and Gilead. Kind of a short description of their practice of being unfaithful to God. God would allow the nations to oppress them. And the reason I picked this one out, the Philistines, this is one of the people we're going to see off and on throughout the history of Israel. The Philistines were kind of like the thorn in the side of Israel. And I think they were probably mentioned most. I think I've got 32 mentions. Anything else? They're quiet tonight. Let me do all the talking. All right, if there's no more verses, then we'll go down. And this was our key words and phrases. Deliver. And is that past tense, delivered? Okay. Yeah, I think that did evil, see that a few times in there, did evil in the sight of the Lord. And this is unfortunately right after, not too long after God delivers them. Then they did evil and angered him again. What else?
Disobedience.
Disobedience, okay. Luis, sorry. Okay. What else?
Almost as a phrase, after him arose.
Okay.
Like the transition.
In the line of Judges. Okay. Who are some of the prominent people that we see in here?
Samson.
Samson. He is the most mentioned judge. I think I've got 38 mentions. Nope, I'm sorry. There's one other one. What other judge do you think might be mentioned more than Samson? Gideon. Okay. Anything else? Okay, let's go ahead and mention the third most mentioned one. Kind of surprising to me because he wasn't exactly the best example, Abimelech. He's just a couple of mentions less than Samson. The Philistines, as we might guess, mentioned quite a few times throughout this. And again, this is the people that are going to be mentioned and seen throughout the Israelite history, at least up until the time of David and Solomon. The time of King Saul, when, if you remember, when David was being pursued by King Saul, he fled into the wilderness. Then for a time he hid amongst the Philistines. And they were about to go into battle against Saul and told David he had to leave because they weren't sure where his loyalties were going to be. Israel, of course, is going to be mentioned in here quite a bit. The Lord, and then also God, and between the two there, that's probably almost 200 mentions there. Then we've got some of the tribes mentioned. Benjamin is mentioned the most times in here. Has anybody got any idea or anybody remember why Benjamin is mentioned so much? Late in the book, you've got the concubine of the Levite who had basically been, I don't know if there's a nice term for it, raped and killed, and nobody came to her defense when she was going through the land of Benjamin. And so when the Levite found her, cut her up in pieces and sent them to all the tribes. And the Benjamites were held accountable for not standing up for her when they could have basically protected her life. And the rest of the Israelites made war against them and killed almost all their men. And so you got three chapters that tell this story. And so that's why Benjamin is mentioned probably more often than the rest of them, because that one event. Another one of the tribes is mentioned a few more times than the others, Ephraim. And I think this probably because some of the events that took place in that region with the Baals, the false gods, with Gideon also, Judah. S- about the only other tribe that's mentioned more than just a few times. One last judge I'm going to put in here is not mentioned quite as many times as the rest, but I think we know the story. Jephthah. Everybody remember the story of Jephthah? No? Oh, the vow. Vow, yes, okay. I thought you said no at first there. The vow, yeah, the vow. What was the vow? What was this rash vow that he made? It was rash. He did put a lot of thought into it.
He said that if you deliver the people of Ammon into our hands, that the first thing that comes through this door or gate, I will make a sacrifice onto you. Turn that, I guess it was his daughter.
His daughter. Yep. So how much did he regret that vow after having said that? Imagine, like any parent, when you see that the first thing that's coming to you is not a thing, but your daughter, my heart would sink too. Okay, anything else? Any other comments on this? So if we take a step back here and look at some of the most repeated phrase, I'm hoping you can read my writing up there. They did evil, God delivered, after him arose Israel, Lord and God, Philistine, Samson, Gideon, Lord said, Abimelech, Benjamin, Ephraim, Judah, Jephthah, disobedience. If you know who the people are, you know who the tribes are, you can kind of guess what's going on. You can kind of see what's going on. The tribes, these are the ones that the most is going to be mentioned with them because this is where the events are taking place. And of course, the men are the judges. And again, as we might expect, since it's the book of Judges, we would expect to see a lot about the judges. Now, the rest of the judges are not listed up here, but we can list every one of them because that's what this book is about. They're just not mentioned as many times as these others. Why did God give them judges? Why did they get judges? So it really was God's idea to deliver them, sent somebody to them to deliver them from their oppressors, and it is, as you said, because they erred. They had strayed from God. If they had continued faithfully with God, they wouldn't have had any need for the judges. But because they did stray, they needed someone to lead them back in the right way. Remember Joshua? What did he do for the people of Israel? What was said about them all the time that he was leading? They were faithful. So God's trying to get them to get that position again. And when he sends a judge, for a while, that works. But then when he dies, what do?
They stray again.
They go back. What do we read that passage Jeff referred to, chapter 21, verse 25? What do they do when they're on their own?
Do what they thought was right in their sight.
In their own eyes. It reminds me of a proverb. The fool is right in his own eyes. Put those two together, what we see is Israel was very foolish in thinking that they could just do whatever they wanted to do. Anyone else besides me seeing that in our country nowadays? Doesn't that seem to be the culture of today? Everybody doing what is right in their own eyes. And you can't tell me I'm wrong. Who are you to tell me? That's the attitude. You can't tell anybody else that they're wrong. And every time somebody says that, I'm thinking, are you telling me I'm wrong when I do? That's the logic of that argument. when they didn't have that leader. I think you're right. They had that void. They were used to having someone lead them. The problem was is that they didn't decide for themselves that I'm going to follow God. They said, I'm going to follow whichever the way the leader is taking me. And when they didn't have a leader, they just did whatever they thought was right in their own eyes.
As long as the leader followed God, they were okay because they were following the leader.
Yep.
They weren't following God. And they weren't, like you said, making decisions as the head of the household. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the
right.
Lord. They're not doing that.
Right. But there's no danger of that today, right? What if you get a charismatic elder or preacher or somebody influential within one congregation?
It depends on whether he decides to follow the Lord or not. If he doesn't decide to follow the Lord, the congregation is going to follow him because he's charismatic.
I've seen it too. Somebody come in very personable, very personal, talking with people, seemed to care for them. And once he got everybody on their side, then he took them away. It happens. That's the danger, that we don't be like Israel and follow the man. We follow God. Derek?
I think there's a distinction, too, between the judges and the kings, in that God sent the judges to solve
yes.
specific issues, to relay his will to the
mm-hmm.
people. And we're told that when the people ask for a king, essentially rejecting hundreds of years of God sending his judges, they really were rejecting him.
Yep.
And he says that specifically, that you know, look, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting
yep.
me and my word. And if I look today, so many people think that in this country we need more laws to solve the moral problems in our country. We don't need more laws. The government's not going to fix our problems.
Yep.
Well, the only thing that can fix our problems is God and his word.
Yep.
Well, but, you know, Derek, if you follow God's laws, it fixes it all.
Understandable. What he's saying, though, is a lot of people look to government to solve the problems that are in this country, and government's not going to solve the problem yet. I don't care how many laws you make.
And what I'm saying is that government is not going to follow God's laws.
Well, they could, but even that, if they made all the laws that God wants, government's not going to be the answer. God is the answer. If you follow after the government, then to me it's kind of like what happened with the judges. They followed the leader, and if the leader was following God, okay, they followed God. They weren't really following God, they were following the leader. Because when the leader was gone, they quit serving. But if they took him away from God, they'd follow him still. So it wasn't the leader that's going to save him, and I think that's what we're seeing in this. Whoever the leader was wasn't the one's going to guide him in the right way. They needed, and I think that's why they kept going up that roller coaster. They never really committed themselves to God. They just kind of followed whoever was leading them. And until we commit ourselves to God as a church, individually, but as a church, then that could happen here too. You know, someone come along and be charismatic and convince everybody that this is the greatest thing. If we're not careful, following the man rather than God, we can do the same thing.
So if that leader or that somebody comes along and does not want to offend a church member,
right?
So kind of goes with it because
yep.
Well, the money and finances involved.
Yep. Seen that too.
But back then, I wonder how many Bibles did the Israelites have?
Well, they had the written word. They didn't have Bibles like we have, but they did. They were supposed to have the word read to them minimum every 7 years. Now, when you get late in the history of Israel, we see that they weren't even doing that. That there's, I think, a time in was it Josiah? When he tried to restore the worship, they had the temple cleaned out because it was in ruins. That ought to tell you something. And in the cleaning out of the temple, they find the scroll, the book of the law. That tells me they hadn't looked at it in quite a while. So they didn't have access like we do, but the priests were supposed to be teaching the law whether they had one in their house or not, they were supposed to be teaching law. They weren't doing that either. And that's how they strayed.
But now we have this available to everyone in this country, in this world. It's available to us whether we choose to open it up and let it guide us, let it guide us in what we need to do instead of depending on the government.
You're right. Or even our church leaders. You know, you can't say, well, preacher, you're not teaching me enough. Okay, I grant that I'm not going to be able to teach you everything that's out there, but what responsibility do you have to learn that? Since I can't teach you all in a very short amount of time all that's there, then you have a responsibility to do what you can to learn too. And again, I think this goes back to the Israelite example. They obviously weren't committing themselves to that. Lottie, did I see him? Yep. Well, it says it back to chapter 2 even, that the generation arose after Elder Joshua and those of his generation passed on. Then there arose a generation that did not know God. How did that happen? What were the Israelites supposed to do? Deuteronomy 6 through 9. Teach these things to your children in the morning when you rise up, when you sit down to eat, when you walk in the way, when you lie down at night. In other words, all the time, somebody didn't do their job. And again, it's that lack of commitment to God's word and his ways. Elvis?
A little leaven leavens the whole, and that goes for good or for bad. And so, Lonnie's point about from the time of Joshua to the end of Judges, you see this 180, and if leadership didn't matter, then that would be true. But yet, leadership does matter.
Yep.
And who's running the show matters. People in office who proclaim truth to the extent that they can, it matters. It sets a tone for our country. And if it wasn't true, then righteousness, exalts a nation, but sin is reproached to any people. And so you can see what happens to Israel when they behave and follow those ordinances, and when they also disobey and turn away from God. And I think that correlation stems right into our nation to this day.
Yeah, I think we see that all throughout the Israelite history, whether it's judges or kings, and I can't remember which king it is right now off the top of my head, but I remember one passage. I know it's somewhere around the time of either before or after Ahab. But there was one king, it was said, that he caused the nation to be unfaithful to the God. And by his example. So we know the influence that the leaders have on them. And I think, too, it does make a difference because that leader is going to be held accountable. And especially in the nation of Israel, God is basically putting these people in power. They are very accountable for what they are doing. And if they are going to lead his people astray, they are going to be the ones to answer for it. Now, individual people, yeah, certainly they're going to have to give an account, but that leader is too. Problem is, as we see in our country, for those of you who are old enough, you've probably seen that decline in leadership over the years, of people even willing to publicly state their faith in God and godly standards. I can point to a few presidents pre-1988, we'll say, who weren't ashamed to mention that. I remember that, when I was old enough to vote for president, that the one who was running was not ashamed to say that. Even as president, on his television talks, he would not be afraid to mention and exhort the nation to godly values. And even the one after him. And prior to that, I remember seeing some Kennedy, the J. John F. Kennedy making statements about godliness and a nation having high moral standards. But those times are gone. You know, nowadays, you've got presidential candidates that on the campaign trail tell you about how horrible these people are who follow after God. Now, not Islam, but these horrible Christians.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question, and I can't remember this in my life. I mean, we have a national cathedral right there in Washington.
Yeah.
And how many presidents do you know that have consistently attended services there and taken their faith, whatever it is, Christian faith, into the national cathedral and said, guys, we're going to have services here on Sunday morning, and I will be here.
I don't know if I could answer for all of them, but I don't know if that would even make news.
Oh, it'd make big news because the Secret Service would hate it, because it would be a nightmare to protect him while he was there.
I don't know. But suffice it to say, we haven't really had leadership for a long while that are really interested in following after God's standards. And so, while we are all individually accountable for ourselves, those who are leading are going to be held accountable too for which way they're taking us. At the same time, we have to stop and think, okay, how did we get these leaders? Well, in this country, we choose them. So if this is by our choosing, what does that say about us as a nation?
We're blind.
Blind, or we want people ungodly just like us as a nation, so that we don't have anybody that I'm going to feel uncomfortable when they get up there and say something. Derek?
I would say we became easy targets because we stopped acting like Christians.
I agree. Now, I remember reading a column by Cal Thomas 20 years ago. I don't know if you know who Cal Thomas is, but he's not afraid to intermix the faith and politics. You know, the two things you're never supposed to talk about, but He said 20 years ago that the reason that there's not a whole lot of improvement in marriage divorces or marriages ending in divorces because so many people professing to be Christians have the same divorce rate as those outside the church. So it's hard to talk about that when you've got the same problem. And that's true. If you look at what is portrayed on mainstream media about Christianity, you rarely see any pictures of a Christian as you would see, as we're supposed to be. What you see are all the bad examples and the hypocrisy and the hatefulness that is driven more by personal desires rather than what the Scripture teaches. And I think some, especially in this country, we don't like hyphenated names, but I think there's a lot of people who consider themselves American-Christian, because America and America part comes first, and so they put their country's desires more than Christ's desires over that, and we get that mixed up and we forget that Christ is supposed to be first. We talk about other nations, about, you know, let's go bomb them to nothing. We realize there's people over there that have souls. Why are we so in a big rush to wipe off another nation off the face of the earth? All we should be doing is sending people over there to teach them the gospel. But we get mixed up in that. When the Israelites, you know, getting back to our study here, when they got mixed up, it took them away from God every time. You mix anything with there's a strong desire, whether it be national pride or your fleshly desires or politics or whatever it may be, you mix that, try to mix that in with your faith, and you're going to have problems. It's going to take you away from God every time. God doesn't need our help with our politics and our desires and our country, as far as that goes. Just stick with the way of God. Okay, any other? Allie? That's true. If the entire nation had kept that commandment to teach your children, I seriously doubt they would have had the problems that they did have. If they taught it, they lived it, it's kind of hard to overcome a good example and good teaching. It's like a sign I saw in southeast Missouri one time passing through this little town that was about as big as a blink of your eye. It had one of those little flashing portable signs at the edge of town that said there's nothing worse than a good teaching followed by a bad example. And if we don't follow up what we're teaching our kids, then all the words are going to go for nothing. And you know, we can look at the nation of Israel again. I don't know where they failed at, the teaching or the example, but I do know that a generation arose that did not know God or His Word. Now that tells me that somebody wasn't teaching at the very least. So that's what we can do. Start at home. Start with your kids. Don't wait till they're 18 and wonder what happened.
Teach our kids, and when we can, try to reach out without offending our neighbor's kids.
Yeah, sure.
People get offended when they tell them about Christ. The parents do. So we start at our house. We can change Washington. We can change Hawaii, whatever it be, we got to change our house.
Yep.
Our kids.
Yep.
To fear God.
And show it. Yep. Hey, anything else? Ron?
I think, too, we need to be not naive and realize that there's faithful Christians that do find themselves lacking in the fact that they do not teach their children. They seem to be the kind that will be active and motivated to do well, but their children, they seem to fail. You know, I think a good example, since we're talking about the judges, is the last judge.
Yep.
And the example of his two sons.
Right, Eli.
For the reason for asking for a king.
Right.
Samuel,
right.
When you die and you're gone, these two guys is going to be the next judge, prophet/judge.
Yep.
We don't think so.
Yep.
We want a king. And therein, you know, we're talking about a judge, a prophet. Samuel, how do any of us compare to him?
Yep.
And that's something we really need to look at, about what are we teaching our children to teach their children.
That little, I don't know what the right word is, little chain, for lack of a better term. You got Eli and his sons were no good, but yet Eli raised Samuel, and Samuel turned out pretty good. And then when Samuel was raised up, what about his kids? They were worthless too. So I realize that sometimes, even when parents do the very best they can, that sometimes their kids can still turn out to be rotten. That's a given. That's a truism. But it's kind of like, I think it's an old John Wooden quote, you may shoot only 80%, but when you don't try, that's 0%. Something along those lines. When you try to teach your children, they may not all be faithful. They may not ever know the Lord. But if you don't ever teach them, that's a guarantee that it'll be 100% that won't. Ken? Well, I would say that even if they were still teenagers or young adults, you still have that freedom of choice.
Right.
But if you never teach them, you're almost guaranteeing your children are never going to follow God. There's no guaranteed 100% success rate when you even do your very best because of what you said. We're all free moral agents. Especially,
that is our chief.
That's our charge, Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Yep. And we see what happens when people do not teach their children. If we can bring it down to a smaller scale of the family, why would we expect there to be anything different? If we don't teach our children, if we don't show them God, they're probably not going to learn anything favorable about Him, and they're probably not going to follow Him. There may be exceptions. I've seen that too. Someone not raised in a godly home learned God. It can happen. But as a parent, I don't know how you could not teach your children, especially fathers. You've been given a specific charge to bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. I can't get around that. And I'm going to be held responsible for it. And you know, we look back at Israel and see their example. We see where they fail. All right. About quitting time, so we'll pick up with the chart next week. James Stridell will be teaching the class next week. I will be in Missouri. Appreciate all your comments.